WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Sarah Mendelson is one of the many young Americans who have spent time in Russia working on the political transition to democracy. From 1994 to 1995, she served on the staff of the National Democratic Institute's Moscow office, where she worked with Russia's reformist political parties on preparations for parliamentary and presidential elections. She helped bring Western campaign techniques into electoral politics. She's observed parliamentary elections in Russia, and this year she observed the presidential elections as part of her independent research on international efforts to build and sustain democratic institutions in post-Soviet Russia. Mendelson also teaches political science at the State University of New York at Albany. I asked her what campaign techniques she emphasized to political groups in Moscow.
It's not a sort of a big mystery what it is that you're going to bring to them. I mean, you're going to You talk about the message development, you talk about sort of video training, political ads on television, direct mail. You give people a variety of things. You sort of say, well, look, this is how we do it. This is how it's done in Great Britain. This is how it's done in Canada. Pick and choose. I mean, if you like something, use it. If you don't like it, don't use it. And initially, people's response is often, oh, well, these things aren't going to work here. I mean, for example, direct mail. You know, the mail system isn't very good. Direct mail will never work here. Well, in fact, the first nationwide direct mail campaign went out May 9th, and it was targeted, I think it was about 3.5 million pieces of mail went out from Boris Yeltsin's team, well, from Boris Yeltsin, to all the veterans of World War II. And different letters. They had a series of different letters so that if one person living in one apartment lived next to a veteran, they'd get different letters. And if this is the first time that you've ever received a piece of mail like that, it's quite startling and, in fact, quite moving for these people.
Were you able to measure the impact that that mailing had?
Well, I've been given, the people who ran the direct mail campaign have measured it extensively, and they're quite pleased with the results, not only because Boris Yeltsin won, but also because the mayor of Moscow, whom they were working for, Yuri Lushkov, came in with a 90% turnout or 90% rating. So the feeling is, by and large, that direct mail was very effective at luring voting parts of the voting population that could possibly have gone over to the communists.
The people like yourself who were in Moscow working for democracy, did you see yourself as really working for Yeltsin since he was more of the democratic representative? Or did you see yourself as working for just the idea of voting in general and whoever wins, wins?
Absolutely not voting. Absolutely not working for Yeltsin per se. I began with NDI in September 94. In December 94, Yeltsin sent troops into Chechnya, and several of the parties that we worked with broke away from the Yeltsin, what was then called, well, what used to be called the Party of Power, which was then called the Party of War. Yeltsin was not a uncontroversial figure among the party activists with whom we worked. So I think the answer is really that it's a much larger process versus outcome. It's the sense that elections should happen, that political parties are absolutely central to a democratic state, and any efforts to increase the viability of political parties is a worthy work, in a sense, but that the whole effort at democratization goes beyond political parties, it goes beyond elections and campaigns, it involves helping to establish the rule of law, it involves encouraging the proliferation of independent television stations and the role of the media in the democratizing state. So it includes encouraging the development of the Central Electoral Commission, the people who bring you the elections.
I had read reports that members of the press were basically being bought off by Yeltsin, that he was basically buying good articles about him. Did you talk to any journalists who were willing to accept the money for the article?
I didn't speak specifically with journalists who accepted money, but I was witness to several what I thought were strange conversations. The day that, I guess 2 days before the second round, Yeltsin issued a, in quotes, interview that he had done with, I think it was the Interfax News Service. And it was unclear whether or not Yeltsin had actually met with the journalist conducting the interviews, or if it had been a series of questions that had been given to him, and the journalist had then received written questions, written answers. And when asking Russian journalists, which was it, the line that we were given was, look, Yeltsin met with them, that's what we're saying, don't ask any other questions. Basically, we're all in this together, we want Yeltsin to win, don't dig any further. And Western journalist friends of mine would say, well, but did Yeltsin actually meet with the Interfax News people? Well, no, but that's beside the point. But I think that this brings up a larger issue, which is that the role of the media was split in many ways. Yes, in fact, there's very good evidence that the Yeltsin team bought off journalists. And in fact, that I've been told this happened in 93 as well as in 96. But I think that, well, I think that this is extremely problematic, obviously. I think that the situation that was confronting Russian journalists is a situation that no Western journalist has confronted, and that is that there was a choice between, or they perceived that it was a choice between going back and going forward, and that for these journalists, while they may have been able to use standard journalistic techniques to highlight the problems of Zhuganov, they were really struck with fear at the possible outcome of a Zhuganov win. In fact, there were television managers of independent television stations who said, look, we've got our bags packed. It's very clear to us if Zhuganov wins, we're out the door.
It sounds so idealistic when you hear that Americans have gone to Russia to help instill democracy and to help start democratic institutions. Yet what that sometimes practically seems to translate into is that people are going abroad to teach how to go negative and how to do mass mailings and sound bites on TV and stuff. And isn't that exactly what has kept so many Americans disenchanted about politics, as opposed to that which keeps us feeling that democracy is, I mean, people don't think of democracy as sound bites and going negative and spin control.
I think there are really two issues here. One is that regardless of whether there were Americans working in Russia, these are standard marketing techniques, and as Russia becomes...
Precisely, the marketing techniques and not the essence of democracy.
Yes, but the point is that, in fact, Russians will move towards those techniques regardless of whether or not Americans are suggesting them or showing them that, in fact, they're used in the West. What happens is you're doing two things. You're doing the sort of nuts and bolts of campaigns. This is how we do it. You can do it differently. This is not the essence of democracy. Political parties, elections are the essence of democracy. But these are the ways in which elections have evolved, not only in this country, but around the world. But I think what you also try and do is you focus on, as much as you can, the transfer of ideas, meaning the transparency of elections, the need for multi-party involvement in elections. That's a much harder thing. That's a much sort of longer term goal, but it's part and parcel. It may sound idealistic, but really, what's the choice? I mean, would you just stay home and say, well, let's just watch and see what happens, and we don't really have any stake in it? I mean, I think that it's absolutely in U.S. national interest to see Russia evolve as a democracy. And in fact, I think it's in Russia's national interest to see Russia evolve in a democracy.
My guest is Sarah Mendelson, who has worked in Moscow bringing Western campaign techniques to political parties. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sarah Mendelson. She's worked on bringing Western campaign techniques to Russia, and she observed the parliamentary and presidential elections. A lot of people like you, a lot of Americans, younger Americans, are going to newly democratic countries to help create new democratic institutions and to help with elections. And from something I read that you wrote, I really get the sense that in Moscow, there's become a whole, like, American singles scene of young people who've come there to help create democratic institutions.
That's right. I mean, Moscow is no longer... Moscow has become a fun place. Moscow has ups and downs, of course, but you can spend all day in the trenches sort of working with political parties, and then you can go and go to a bar, go to a club and go dancing, and in fact, sort of wander into a diner at 4 a.m. and have a burger and a shake. All the sort of accoutrements that go along with Westerners living abroad have come to Moscow.
Describe what the social life in Moscow is like now and how that compares to when you were there years ago when it was still a communist place.
Well, there are many, many restaurants that have sprung up all over Moscow. And most recently, there is a fabulous new restaurant where you can dine on sort of California cuisine. In fact, you can dine on New Brunswick lobsters with California wine. And these places are filled with certainly expats, but also with Russians. And you can go from there to Tex-Mex restaurants. There are lots of Tex-Mex restaurants. And so people meet and sort of compare margaritas across town. This is completely different from when I was doing research in 1991, where there was maybe one or two hotel bars that you would go and you'd get a beer. But by and large, you met in homes and you met in Russians' homes. And I think that there was a lot more, at least for me, there was a lot more socializing with Russians as opposed to with the expat community. At this point, I suppose because I was working with Russians, I would sort of do that by the day and then go out at night. But I think that's true for most of us. There are a few sort of diehards who really do live a much more Russian existence, who don't ever go to these restaurants or who rarely go to these restaurants, and who minimize their contact with Americans.
So what are the dating habits, the social habits in Moscow now between the Americans there who are working to open up new markets and to further democratic causes, and Russians? Is there a lot of dating-type socialization?
Well, I think the dating situation is as follows. American men tend to date Russian women. American women rarely date Russian men.
Why is that?
Well, I think what happens is that for American men, Russian women represent a sort of pre-feminist woman, a sort of 1950s woman. And this is not to say that they are actually like this. This is to say that this is how I think a lot of American men perceive them. They tend to be somewhat softer in manner, perhaps willing to support their husbands or their boyfriends in ways that are frankly not always possible for American women who are working 60 to 70 hours a week. On the flip side, American women are in some ways quite threatening for Russian men. They make more money than most Russian men. Russian men can be quite chivalrous and they want to take American women, or they want to take women out, pay for things. And that becomes a bit awkward when the women are making much more. But I think also that American women who are overseas, you know, sort of young, independent, living this kind of life, they tend to be feminists. And Russian men, by and large, are not feminists. So there's a disconnect on that particular social aspect. But you know, it doesn't mean that they're not friends. That just means that they may not be partners for life.
My impression is that a lot of younger people are working abroad, finding jobs in newly emerging democracies. And you're in your 30s now. You have spent a lot of time in Moscow, but also teach at the State University of New York at Albany. I'm wondering if you see a pattern here, if you think that it's that there's just a trend of a lot of younger people working, at least spending some time working in other countries.
I think for people who are politically motivated, this is a very specific time period. That is the post collapse of the Soviet Union and the sort of liberation, if you will, of Eastern Europe and the Baltic states has presented for the politically minded 20s and 30-year-olds an exceptional opportunity in a way that even the Peace Corps doesn't really approach, where you can go and be a part of something that is new and struggling, that has a lot of history, that is trying to be a part of the West, but yet has its own very specific history, and that young people can do, they can get jobs that enable them to be involved in ways that they could never be involved in the West. That is, they have much more responsibility. You see a lot of young people coming in and either in democratization or in the business community. And having fairly senior responsibilities so that we'd show up with meetings with the equivalent of senators, and I'd be in a meeting with, you know, other 20 and 30-year-olds meeting with, you know, the equivalent of these senators.
Mm-hmm. And giving them advice.
And, well, giving them advice or asking what they needed. I mean, I still resist the idea that we were there to learn as much from them as I think they were from us. But certainly, you know, having a business meeting with these people. I mean, how many times do 20 and 30-year-olds, other than George Stephanopoulos, have meetings with prominent American politicians on a regular basis?
Mm-hmm. Well, Sarah Mendelson, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sarah Mendelson is back in the States. She teaches political science at the State University of New York at Albany.